This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. For years, Syria has endured ruinous civil war, violence between government and its citizens. Rebel groups have killed thousands of Syrians and left millions of people displaced from their homes. And most of what we know about the conflict has come from journalists, but artists, too, have rendered the many stories, large and small, that have emerged from the violence. Thousands of Syrians have blended art and activism through videos, dance, street art, and more. In her new book, Miriam Cook examines decades of art in Syria. The book is called Dancing in Damascus, Creativity, Resilience, and the Syrian Revolution. Miriam Cook is Braxton Craven Professor of Arab Culture at Duke University and joins me now in the studio. Welcome back, Miriam. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me back.
Tell us about why the scope of this book and what you chose to look at.
Well, I started the book pretty much simultaneous with the Arab Spring. So that was starting in late December of 2010, going to Egypt and around the Arab world. I was fascinated by the profusion of cultural production and quickly then realized that it was going to be way too much for me to be able to cover what was happening in all of these Arab revolutions. But then I became particularly interested in the Syrian revolution because having spent 7 months in 95-96 in Syria when Hafez Assad, the father of the current ruler, was in power, very, very oppressive, I began to see a connection between the writers and filmmakers and playwrights whom I had gotten to know during my time there and about whom I had written in Dissident Syria, came out in 2007, and what was going on today. So that I began to make this connection and realize that the kind of cultural production that had been going on under Hafez Assad was not as hopeless as the artists activists, as I call them in this book, had thought. I spoke with many of them, and their insistence was we have to record what we're going through, not because it's going to change anything, but because we have to resist what one of them called the normalization of violence. And so a number of the people that I knew at the time are now dead, but I wish that they had lived long enough to see that their words that are now being circulated anew were, in fact, in some ways, the stimulus for this extraordinary event.
And as you point out, I mean, you talk about artist activists, but it's very dangerous work in Syria where repression of dissent has been an occupation for decades.
Yes, and the difference now is, A, the what everybody throughout the Arab Spring countries has called the wall of fear has cracked. And that seemed absolutely impossible because for 40 years in Syria under the rule of father and son Assad, there had been absolute atomization, to use Hannah Arendt's term. In other words, no trust among individuals within a family, with schoolmates, nobody trusted anybody. And so there was this silencing. And suddenly we have this outpouring of cultural production, dance, art, videos, music of all sorts, and people coming together in a way that seemed absolutely unimaginable, more so in Syria than in any other Arab country, with the possible exception of Saddam Hussein's Iraq.
You talk about this in your book and how it worked, and maybe you can tell us a little bit about how this cultural production has the effect of reversing atomization and bringing people together, giving folks a sense of cohesion in all of this.
Well, first of all, what's interesting is where it started. It started in a town on the southern border called Daraa, with some schoolboys scribbled words on a wall, words that have been going around the Arab world, and that is the people want the regime to fall. And they added also a very special little slogan that they had made up, Ijag Dora, Ya Doktor, your turn has come, doctor, because, of course, Bashar was an eye doctor. And so that would seem to have been harmless. But right from the very start, the Bashar regime cracked down on these boys coming home from school, arrested them, tortured them, and absolutely unexpectedly, there were demonstrations not just in Daraa, not just Daraa in Damascus, but across the country. And so people who'd been atomized were coming together in the streets, regardless of what seemed to be an inevitable fate. Syria at the time had the most powerful military in the region. It had an extraordinary network of mukhabarat, or intelligence service, very powerful police, and yet these people came together. So there were demonstrations that went on for, are still going on in some places. At one point in 2013, there were 939 demonstrations on a Friday, because Friday was the day when assembly was allowed, because of Friday is the day of prayer. So we have that as cohesion in a fragmented country. But also what has been so interesting for me, increasingly as we see the revolution continue, despite the fact that, over half of the population is outside their homes, 5 million refugees, 10 million internally displaced people, that the people who started their artistic production within Syria, forced out now because of impossible conditions that did not allow them to stay, are continuing to produce and to act cohesively online. So,
when how much access do you think? Well, maybe we can talk about some of this production. In fact, maybe we should talk now about the YouTube show Top Goon, because it does seem that one of the things that's happening is a much more direct kind of attack against the administration than maybe we had seen decades earlier. You know, what accounts for that, and what effect is it having? So maybe tell us more about Top Goon.
Yes, run by a man who pseudonymously calls himself Jamil. Absolutely brilliant project. And it was part of this early period, late 2011 and early 2012, when artist activists were realizing that news of what was going on inside Syria was not getting out, because, of course, Bashar Assad, with all of the power mechanisms that he controlled, was making sure that news wasn't getting out. And so these people realized that maybe it was up to them, trained in the Damascus Academy of Arts, the Damascus Academy of Drama. They came together, a small group of them, professionals, highly trained, and they put together a finger puppet show called Top Goon. And they then left, filmed in Beirut in a cellar. And the first series has 13 episodes in it, each one ridiculing Bashar, calling him Bishu, and very, very funny, very clever, making fun of his lisp, his famous lisp, a little like mine, and his big ears, and showing how terrified he is of the people. Now, what's interesting about Top Goon, which is also true of a lot of the other works, is that it was subtitled right from the start in English. In other words, this, although written and spoken in Arabic, is in fact designed for worldwide distribution. And it's had a huge impact, particularly in view of the fact that before March 15th, 2011, nobody could critique an Assad. So that was 40 years of absolute prohibition, even on mentioning the word Assad, unless, of course, it was falling over backwards in flattery.
How much was this? Obviously, you say it was in many ways targeted at a Western audience, at an American or English-speaking audience, but was it consumed within Syria, and what effect did it have?
That, of course, is really hard to assess. There is internet there. Internet didn't get to Syria until way after I was there with my husband, Bruce Lawrence, in the mid-90s. So, in fact, the internet and social media became crucially important for people because when people disappeared, that was the only way of keeping in touch. I suspect that they, in as much as the government would allow it, that they did have access to YouTube.
Also, you talked about the importance of dance, and particularly one dance in particular that would perhaps qualify as a folk dance, again, at creating this kind of sense of cohesion. Tell us more about that.
Oh, yes, the debke, a wonderful dance that, in fact, is danced around the region, very often by men, but women can participate also. It's called the debke, and it is a dance that is performed at weddings, at circumcisions, big celebrations. But it became radicalized from the beginning of the revolution in March 2011, so that people would dance it. Now, what's important about this dance is that it is a bodily, it's embodied cohesion, because people are shoulder to shoulder, arms around each other's shoulders, dancing together in uniformity. And so, in fact, before 2011, the debke was danced, absolutely. And one could say, well, you know, so they weren't totally atomized. And yet it was part of a ritual.
Right.
And now it has become this emblem of the people's refusal, because it's not so much about joy, it's about determination. And in some ways, one can see the determination, the power of the body, and particularly of the feet in dance, in a short video made for YouTube that I hope people will look up after the show, called Jazzmenko, Jazmenko. And it's about flamenco dancers who are Syrians, who returned to the Damascus cultural center where they used to dance flamenco, and their shock upon entering into this center that is totally destroyed, and listening to the bombs, and then imagining the music to which they used to dance, and starting to dance, and the sound of their feet on the destroyed wooden platform that they get up onto and dance is the sound that of the debke. It's the sound of people who are going to dance their revolution to the bitter end.
But and all of this, I think, points to the resilience, the genius, and the diversity in this kind of cultural production. You have, on the one hand, Top Gun, a very intentional critique, right? I mean, this is a bunch of minds coming together and creating something out of nothing. That's a very deliberate critique. And another way is just recontextualizing a folk dance. How does that happen? How does that second kind of transformation from what is just an ordinary ritual, how does it become politicized?
That's a great question, and I'm not quite sure exactly how that happens, but I'd like to maybe connect it to another art form that I think is doing something similar, and that is almost a kind of sampling from art and daily reality in Syria, and that is the work of an artist called Tamam Azem. He is currently in Germany. And he's come up with a new art form, an inter-iconic art form, where he takes images from the internet of destroyed buildings, a little like the cover of my book. And he superimposes on those found images from the internet iconic masterpieces from Europe. And the one that is most striking and that for me does a little bit of this reworking of something that is already out there but repurposed for the revolution is a piece that he does using Matisse's dancers, an extraordinary image of these Matisse's dancers from, you know, the beginning of the 20th century, that he has he's colored them orange, and these are the five dancers that are dancing on the rubble of destroyed buildings. And like the cover of my book by Wissam al-Jazairi that shows this gorgeous ballerina on the background of destroyed buildings, it is the promise of the revolution that no matter how hard Bashar's regime tries to destroy the revolution, the opposition, there is a promise by these artists, activists, that they will dance on the ruins and phoenix-like emerge out of the ashes.
And you make reference to something that you didn't call, but this idea of dark matter, of art having a kind of dark matter that works in mysterious ways but effective ways.
Yes, I take the term from Gregory Cholet, whose work I admire. And that is the recognition not only in Syria but in the Arab Spring countries that there was this ferment of artistic production, musical production, underground that had been going on for a long time that nobody had seen, but that when there was a crack, the crack in the wall of fear, that this art was able to pour out of the crack.
Well, I thank you for sharing it with us, and you talked about the photo on the cover of your book. We have that at our website. The book is called Dancing in Damascus, Creativity, Resilience, and the Syrian Revolution. Miriam Cook is the author and my guest. Miriam, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you so much for having me. Bye-bye.
Just ahead on this program, students at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro have messages for the president, and if you want to hear them, you can stay tuned to this program. Stay tuned.